Friends, we a couple of months back, we had Pat McGowan. Hold on, let me get this one off. All right, we had a good friend of the community, Pat McGowan, who is chairman. He's a builder, very successful entrepreneur. He's a chairman of a Solace House, and it was probably one of the most significant programs in recent history anyway, with the reaction that we got to Pat McGowan and the topic of suicide, self-harm. It brought again a tremendous level of interest. So it's my pleasure to welcome Rebecca Sked, who is the CEO of Solace House here in New York City, in Long Island City, and in Yonkers. Rebecca, you're very welcome indeed.
Hi, Adrian. Thanks so much for inviting us on this morning.
I think it is probably, if not the singular most difficult topic to address, because for many of us, at least, who grew up in Ireland, the stigma attached to a family that was already grieving for a member who resorted to suicide was indeed, it was not only unfair, but it was unconscionable. And Ireland, unfortunately, has you know, a unique distinction of having the highest rate of suicides in Europe, and thankfully, we are able to talk about it on both sides of the Atlantic, because it is indeed, you know, the greatest tragedy, you know, of life. Can you tell us a little bit about, first of all, the history of Solace House, better known as Pieta House in Ireland, founded by Joan Freeman?
Yeah, so I'd be happy to. Joan Freeman came to New York in 2015, actually the end of 2014, and she wanted to establish roots to, you know, start doing darkness into light walks within the U.S.
Yeah.
When she came here, she was very kind of immersed in the Irish community, making some connections. She was very quick to, you know, recognize that there was very few mental health services that would be, that could be easily accessed by people, particularly the Irish, our Irish community and the undocumented. There were very little places for them to go, but there was also nowhere where they could go for free. So what she wanted to create was an environment that people could go, they would have no hesitation in accessing services, they wouldn't be questioned or require health insurance or have to worry about the finances. She wanted to create somewhere that was kind of like home for them, gave them that homely, warm feeling, very welcoming, with no worries about anything else when they came to our services. So she created that atmosphere very easily, and we opened our first service in the New York Irish Center building September 2015, and our offices there, you know, there, when you come to our center, you're welcomed with a cup of tea and a friendly smile. So that atmosphere that Joan created is still very much very evident in both of our New York centers, and I think, you know, her mission was to create an easily accessible service where people would feel very welcomed and not afraid, and that most certainly lives on very strongly in our services.
The again, I think for a great number of people, there is some indication I think the the most common of all awareness is, you know, after somebody takes their own life, mm-hmm. is that there were no signs whatsoever. There's nothing in particular to, you know, to indicate that ending their own lives is the only solution. But actually, there are, it has now been recognized, you know, that generally somebody who is in that horrific state of depression may give some indication to a relative, to a very close friend. How do we make sure we don't miss that? That we don't miss that thing. Sometimes I think we have the, you know, we rather kind of dismiss it and take it as kind of a loosely thrown out reaction to life. What are the telltale signs, or are there?
What we always say to people is never hesitate in asking someone, and don't assume that somebody else is going to. You see, people are still very scared to ask the question, how are you doing? Are you suicidal? Because, you know, they're probably almost scared of what the outcome is going to be. And, you know, they could just brush it off and say, oh, you know, I'm kind of worried about them, but I'm sure they have a friend that's going to ask them if they're okay or look out for them, or a family member. But it's actually, you know, it's our colleagues, our neighbors, they're the people that we should be looking out for. And, you know, never, never, ever assume that somebody else is going to ask them if they're okay, because that might not be the case. So by you just asking a simple question and letting them know that you're there for them, you become their lifeline. You could help save their life. Mm-hmm. So having the education on, you know, what's kind of concerning. Are they giving away some of their valuable belongings? Are they showing a lack of interest in, you know, something that they would have been particularly interested in before, whether it's, you know, they're not going out with you anymore, they don't play that sport that they used to love, they're not planning that vacation that they did every year. It's little things like that that are really, really strong indicators that they don't see themselves being around that much longer. They don't see themselves, you know, needing to book that holiday because they won't be on it. So if there are very small things that people do that can be quite alarming, and we always stress the importance of reaching out to somebody and just saying something as simple as, are you okay? You know, having the information on services like Solace House is massively helpful, because, you know, we can do an intake with somebody's friend or their family member. So that person doesn't even need to come on the phone. So, you know, it's as simple as saying, look, I know this service, it's great. I can call and get the information for you. I can set up an appointment and I can come with you.
Yeah.
And by providing them with that support and that kind of initiative to go to the service, you can genuinely save a life by doing that.
There are a couple of topics that I would like to address, and one is that first step by somebody who has confided noticing, you know, as you've underlined there, some of the telltale signs. There is another area, and that is reluctance from somebody, to call your hotline, to call, because they might think, God forbid, if I'm wrong, that's going to be the worst thing in the world and I'll have to live with it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've seen so many instances where there was reluctance for somebody, you know, to pave the way. Somebody who is suicidal, that may have come from some traumatic experience, not even recent, somewhere in the past.
But
what order would you recommend? Would you you know, you're not going to take an anonymous call saying, okay, looking on somebody, you know, but what order? Okay, you see somebody, you have a family member who's going through depression, mm-hmm. And severe depression. What's the first move?
Anybody is more than welcome to give up the call directly before they even reach out to that person. If they want to get, you know, a really good understanding about our services, what the intake is, and we would also give them some advice on how they should reach out to that person. So mm-hmm. obviously, you know, we don't just pick up the phones and talk directly to clients. More right. often than not, we do get family members calling and saying, look, I'm really worried about this person. Now, we can't call that person directly, just, you know, out of the blue.
Yeah.
So we would give the caller all of the information that they need, a little bit of advice on how to reach out to that person. And then, like, you know, we would try and encourage them to get the potential client to call us directly, just mm-hmm. because when they talk to us on the phone, you know, we can give a little bit of information about our services, what the intake procedure is, and, you know, they kind of warm to us at the phone point. And then when they cause that anxiety, the nervousness, it's often a lot less because they've already spoken to us, they've got a little bit of a relationship with us, and they know what to expect.
Right.
Yeah, that's not always the case. Sometimes the client might not be in a position where they can get on the phone, where they want to talk to you. You know, they're too upset, they're too traumatized. So we can get enough information at phone point from a friend. And, you know, we would say, look, maybe it would be a good idea for you to accompany your friend or family member to their first appointment.
Yes.
And typically, that does happen on the first appointment, sometimes, depending on the level of risk with that client. Come the end of the session and for their next appointment, they don't need that person with them. They finally see that they're getting the help they need, and they can see a little bit of a more hopeful future than they had at their previous appointment. So that connection, that relationship between our staff and the client does happen very quickly, where they're not dependent on having a friend or family member with them. They,
right.
you know, they want help, because people who are suicidal, more often than not, 90% of the time, they don't want to die. They just don't see any other way out.
Mm-hmm.
So once they're, you know, involved in a service that provides some hope, and our therapists really, really care about their clients, that's very evident. Once they see that, the suicidal thoughts, ideations drop rapidly straight away because they have hope again.
You know, can't help but think of how your confidential services are
mm-hmm.
Are so unique. You know, some listeners are family members that are going through, you know, again, severe depression, might think that, you know, suicide prevention, that, you know, that Solace House, maybe they have group meetings like you might have in mm-hmm. Alcoholics Anonymous or something
yeah.
else like that, and they might say, that's the last thing I want to do. How do you, you know, convince those who need your free services?
Mm-hmm.
How do you convince them that the confidentiality of, you know, of what you are doing is paramount to this entire approach?
Well, you know, both the therapist and the client at assessment point sign a confidentiality agreement. So that's when the client officially becomes our client. Now, what we do see is sometimes when we have a client in our care, we will get calls from their family members just saying, oh, I just want to know how he's doing, did he attend his appointment? Now, unfortunately, we can't share any of that information. So once
yeah.
that client becomes our client, that's when communication completely stops with all other people beyond the client.
Yeah.
So, you know, and the thing is, we don't know what's causing the trauma for a client. So if somebody's husband or wife or a parent is calling,
yeah.
and, you know, they're just looking for information, it is harmless. If they just want to know that their family member is doing okay.
Yeah.
Whereas the family member or the client, they might hold back on sharing with their therapist if they had any concerns that we were communicating with anybody within their family circle or their friends. So it's very important that we make it very clear to all of our clients, we will have zero contact with your family members. Your case will not be discussed outside of this room. And we really try and ensure that they know that for 100% certainty. And that's made very clear at assessment point when both the therapist and the client sign the confidentiality agreement. Now, we do another component of the service that we provide is family support.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where we would, you know, one of the family members or the husband or the wife would come in and they would have a couple of sessions with us. And that is to help, it's not to talk about the client, but it's to help the family member cope with what's going on in their lives. Because it is tough and it's very strenuous living with somebody who's suicidal or severely depressed. So we want to kind of give them the strength they need, to support the person. So our rule with that is we absolutely offer that service, but it will be with a different therapist to what the client is seeing. So that way the client knows with 100% certainty that their case is not being discussed.
Yeah. Do a lot of people, in addition to having... you know, that severe depression, which might trigger a suicidal tendency. Mm-hmm. Do most of those feel that they're mentally ill? And how do you separate that from, from everything else? You know, we unfortunately have, it slides easily off the tongue to, you know, for people, the old cliches, you're off your rocker, that one is, you know, only half there, not the full shilling. There's so much tongue-in-cheek and historic, disrespect for those with suicidal tendencies. Are you, and many people might be afraid that if they do go to seek that free, amazing help, you know, from Solace House, that maybe they would referred, to psychiatric wards or something else. There is a desperate kind of misunderstanding about all. You're not going to lock the door, and say, you'd be picked up in a white jacket. And the reason that I point this out is to verbalize what a lot of people might see as that. And that client that you talk about might not want to go to an emergency room in a hospital without knowing what they, what they face. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we would consider ourselves as the alternative to the emergency room. So we know that when a client goes to the emergency room with suicidal ideation, that there is a very high chance that they will be referred to psychiatric services. So unless it's an extreme circumstance where, somebody calls us or is in our offices and has a very active plan to take their own life, that is the only time that we would refer somebody to the emergency room. And at that point, it is life or death, so we have no other choice but to do that. Now, we have never had to do that, but, that is part of our policy if it did get to that point. But we know what happens when a client goes to the emergency room and kind of the aftermath of that. And I'm not saying everybody has a terrible experience with that. We have heard of plenty of positive experiences with, going to the emergency room, getting psychiatric care, and then being referred to kind of services after that. That's kind of twofold as well, because people have very, very, very negative experiences with that. And we all feel very strongly that, if you're suicidal and you're kind of in crisis, the last place you want to be is in a hospital with God knows what happening around you. So that would be very kind of last case scenario for us, and as I said, we have never had to do it. But if it came to us and we had no other choice, then obviously we would. But yeah, it can be very difficult. But as I said, we kind of see ourselves as the alternative to the emergency room, and we're more of a long-term care centre where we'll look after you right away and give you the service you need without having to go through the trauma of going to the emergency room.
Right. Your support, you know, your organization obviously has, you know, a lot of expenses. Providing a professional therapeutic service, as you are, tell us about the origin of, you know, the Solace, the Sunrise Walk.
Yeah. So the Solace Sunrise Walk is one of our biggest annual fundraisers. It takes place every year around this time. And, you know, it's a phenomenal walk because not only does it raise crucial funds for our life-saving service, but it creates a massive, massive, massive amount of awareness. So, you know, I was actually at a walk this morning, Rockland, for the first time. They had a walk for us, and they have to do it a week earlier just because of other things going on in their community next weekend. And it was the first year, and they had 350 people at the walk this morning. And it was just remarkable to see the community come together. And, you know, we say it every year, and it takes months of organizing, but when you're walking on the morning, there is nothing like it. And, you know, it gives us a chance to have a conversation. People there are all there for the same reason. We're all there to, you know, fight the fight against suicide, remember loved ones who have died by suicide. And it just shows you and reinforces the message that you're not alone. There's a whole community here supporting you. And, you know, it also creates a massive amount of awareness around the services that we provide. And, you know, typically around the time of the walk, we would get a lot more calls coming in because people feel it's okay to kind of reach out for help, to ask for help, admit that they're not feeling great. So it's just fantastic, and it's growing every single year. And, you know, just doing the walk this morning reminded me of the experience. It's just outstanding. It's remarkable.
You know, and obviously, Solace House needs, you know, to expand, and, you know, to that end, there is no shortage, you know, of support right across the United States. You can go from, you know, to the Golden Gate Bridge Plaza in San Francisco.
Yeah.
That's next Saturday.
Yeah. There's five more walks.
There's and then you have even in it's the Jack Layton ferry terminal in Toronto, you know, Ontario, Canada.
Walk there. I mean, they get 400 or 500 people walking there every year, so it's remarkable.
It is, and you know, Coldstream Park in Lexington, Kentucky.
Yeah.
All of these taking place next Saturday.
Next Saturday. So we had three, and we have five more.
Okay, it's great. It's a tremendous service, and one that you know, hard to measure in numbers, because we're talking about suicide, end of life, self-harming, prevention, and there are, you know, the bottom line, I think, on all, you know, suicidal, those who unfortunately carry out, you know, ending their own lives, is the fact that they feel, and that each person feels alone, abandoned, and whether they, whether it might be, you know, their own interpretation of what's going on, but saving a life has got to be, you know, one of the greatest charitable endeavors of all time. And again, I want to thank you, you know, as we did with Pat McGowan, chairman, to, you know, for bringing this to attention, for getting this off the ground and providing the most important service and the most timely of all time. So I thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Anyone can make a referral, or indeed you can pick up the phone. You feel that you would like to speak with a professional, somebody who actually, has one goal, one job, one purpose in life, and that is to help you or to help your referral through, a program that is filled with love, and it is, it's a friendly, it is confidential, and yes, you can make an appointment, you can, chat with somebody. And again, bottom line is for those who may be reluctant to even look into what you're doing, there is a friend, there is a family along the way who can go with you. It is confidential. It's not part. It is separate from, although it's in the same building. You're not going to, run into people who are going to the New York Irish Center for something. So to that, I can only say the first step is to call, your phone number, 718-482-0001, and speak with one of the members. It is confidential, it is necessary, and the bottom line is there are very few careers in life can afford the unique distinction and the expertise to save a life. I want to thank you. What about a website? Is there?
Yeah, we have a website. It is going to be changing soon, but we'll have a redirect when that does happen. But for now, it's solacehouseinc.com.
Solace House, one word?
Yeah.
And that is SolaceHouseInc.
dot com.
All right.
So that's just a temporary one.
In
the development of our permanent one at the moment. So,
okay.
Again,
the walks fans, go to the website, you'll find out about it.
Yeah, all the information is there for the remaining walks.
And the night into the bright, the sun-filled morning, symbolizing the journey many in suicidal distress undertake when they visit the centers in New York and Long Island City and in Yonkers. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Okay, you're very welcome indeed. And we wish you luck. And the bottom line on all of this one is you spread the word. There is, without a doubt, there is a service unmatched. It is free, it is confidential, and it is something that we can't emphasize enough how much we support what it is you're doing.
Thank you
again, Rebecca.
All God right, bless. Take care.
Thanks.
Bye.
All right. That's interesting. And I, there is very little that I can add to that. Unfortunately, the suicide, ending one's life, attempting to end one's life, is far, far too common on both sides of the Atlantic. Now, one thing I'd like to add to that, you don't have to be from Ireland. You don't have to be Irish American. If you know somebody, or if you yourself feel that these tendencies that you have, even if they're fleeting, need attention, that telephone number is indeed very, very important. 718-482-0001, and speak with the one of the staff, the professionals there, make an appointment. It's free. And, you know, if in doubt, if you know somebody who is going through severe depression, time to act is now. All right. We...